It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day, call for help. We were guides, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, let the lies be line with a death wish. Be right, didn't have no name on the guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
Welcome into the show, or welcome back to the show, excuse me. Hour two begins. So I mentioned Fred VanVleet has opened himself up to being slandered by all fan bases, as opposed to just the Rockets one when he goes like 4-for-15 or something. He was voted the president of the NBAPA. He succeeds CJ McCollum, who succeeded Chris Paul, who succeeded Derek Fisher. Apparently, it's a point guard thing. Like, the MVP goes to quarterbacks. In football, we haven't had a non-point guard since 2006 when Antonio Davis had it. So, if you're actually McCollum's more like a combo guard, but smaller guards apparently run this position. And Fred, now anytime something bad happens, look at Fred VanVleet. We're going to blame him because CJ McCollum gets blamed for the current CBA.
For the apron and
all that stuff. Cat. They lean into, oh, that's McCollum's fault.
He negotiated.
So, yes.
He agreed to this deal.
Along with all the other players in leadership who decided, yes, this is what we want to do.
Yeah, but he's the president.
He's the president, yes. It falls on the president. So, I don't know when the next CBA comes up, but if it's something that doesn't favor the players or there's a work stoppage, you know who's going to catch it. Fred probably won't. See, the thing is, will Fred VanVleet still be in the NBA the next time? Like, he's 30-something years old now. And all these guys, I guess Derek Fisher wasn't a star at the end of his time, but Fred is what, 31 or 30 now?
So the next, or this current CBA expires.
29-30.
He's 31. In 29-30. So
will Fred still be around in 29-30?
Well, they're probably going to start negotiating it
early
29.
Sure.
So like 28-29. Yeah.
He'll probably still be around in the league.
Yeah, he'll still be around. So just like as, you know, third point guard, you know, making the minimum kind of guy. Like how Corey Joseph played for, I don't know, 7 years longer than anyone thought Corey Joseph would.
DJ Augustine throw
DJ Augustine, ball, yeah. Like, he could be that kind of guy.
Sure, yeah. Good vet. People want him around. Kyle Lowry's still fooling
yeah,
around.
Lowry's still in the league.
Like, yeah, gotcha. So
there's a place for him in the league in, what, 4 years from now?
You're probably right about that. So Fred's got a real chance to be the guy who everyone blames
The
next time a CBA doesn't go in the player's favor.
I'm really excited for him.
Why would you take on this job? I guess if... If your fellow players vote you, you take the job, I guess. But, you know, there's a way to say, hey, not for me. It doesn't seem like a very rewarding job because you're at the beck and call of not just the players, but then you have to negotiate with the owners. And, of course, there's actual lawyers involved. So it's not like Fred going over contracts himself all the time. It's not that. But he will be the face of anything that doesn't work out.
He's got to touch base with all the team union reps.
Sure.
He's got to.
Not for me, I would say.
No.
I just want to play ball.
Oh, no.
Not for me. But now you have the...
I got paid $40 million a year for 2 years. I think I'm worried about that.
At least we have the NBA's president or Players Association president in town when he's not working out.
So we can
out
ask him all the... All the pressing questions?
Yes. When there's a big issue in the NBA, Fred's right there to answer them. When he's not working out with Ime in the offseason.
That was very funny.
It was. Because we forget that Ime's like 6'5". Fred's maybe 5'11". Maybe 6 feet tall, whatever he is.
Fred VanVleet's made $165 million.
And he wants to take on this responsibility? What are you doing?
He's a better man than me.
Like, all those guys are. Like, C.J. McCollum was a very wealthy man. Chris Paul, certainly. They all are of a certain level where you take this on because you're a good vet. You're the vets people respect.
How did he make this much? Oh, I guess he was a second round pick, so he got paid fast. He got his second contract after 2 years.
Yeah. He outplayed where he was picked, so the Raptors decided to reward him.
Man.
I don't know, man. That's a job. That's a thankless job. And you'll always be the guy who screwed something up.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not even like a thankless job. It's a everyone hates you job. Yes.
Yeah.
It's the second
you get blamed.
Anything bad that happens to anybody's team as like a cap casualty or anything, your fault.
Yeah.
even if it's like the Denver Nuggets saying that, hey, because of the second apron, like there might come a day where we can't afford to keep Nikola Jokic. The Nuggets know that to be in the second apron, you have to like pay the tax, which is something they don't do. Like, second apron isn't even their problem. It's like they're trying to duck the tax. That's not CJ McCollum's fault. That's not in 5 years Fred VanVleet's fault. Like, what are you doing?
Through his time in the NBA, maybe the only fan base who really disliked Fred VanVleet were the Warrior fans because of what he did in the finals. Or maybe a team on that run during the playoff.
Yeah,
run.
I think the Bucks too.
Yeah, maybe. But for the most part, he was a guy who kind of inoffensive.
Yeah, steady hand, backup point guard, start and then graduate to like starting point guard. Very classic floor general type.
Sure, everyone needs one of those types. He falls into that category. You'd love to have a Fred VanVleet on your team. Now, good luck, Fred. Hopefully, it all goes well for you. But the NBA PA president, Fred VanVleet. I don't think there will be an inauguration. I don't even know how they celebrate that other than, hey, now you handle all the league's mess. When things go wrong, when there's a big issue that matters to the entire league, Fred VanVleet will be the one people look to have answers. So congratulations to him, and good luck. As far as the Rockets are concerned, I just ask that you shoot above 40% from the field. Can we reach that? Maybe get to league average, which would be a departure from what he has been over his career. Speaking of smaller guards, Reed Shepard had a couple summer league games. We'll see if he goes today. The Rockets split. No, they lost both, right? They lost to the Clippers and the Pistons. I don't remember if they beat the Clippers. I know they lost to the Pistons. I don't remember if they beat the Clippers. Reed Shepard better in game one. Did get up a lot of shots in both. The efficiency took a real downturn against the Pistons. He is mic'd up in the game talking about the physicality the Pistons showed. And, you start with love before you complain. Like, hey, I love the physicality, but I got to be able to shoot. And he showed his wrists and his arms to the referee, I guess. He said he believed he was getting banged up a little bit too much. Got to be able to shoot, got to be able to dribble. And the Pistons said, no, you don't. Until the rules say you don't. Until the rules say you do, you don't. And he went like 6 for 19, had as many turnovers as made field goals in game two. And I was not looking for him to shoot a lot. It wasn't, it's fine. I mean, it's better than some of the other options. I was looking to see if he could run the team. And not every turnover that winds up on your plate is your fault. Whether some guy's in the wrong spot or maybe you do get fouled and it's not called. But it wasn't a encouraging performance against the Pistons, particularly for a team who decided to get after him physically and pressure him. If he does play the rest of summer league, you hope he bounces back and shows the ability to handle some of that stuff. Because I know people believe that I saw this somewhere that smaller guards may be a bigger factor going forward because of how defenses are going to be played. Like a lot of the times, maybe the 6'6 wing who you're asking to bring the ball up can't handle or won't be able to handle the pressure defenses being putting them by smaller aggressive guards. And maybe you need a couple guys of maybe not expressly Reed Shepard size, but around the 6'1, 6'2 types, 6'3 or so to be able to just handle the ball pressure. That's going to be, it's going to be putting their way. to try to run offense. And he didn't do a great job of it against the Clippers. Did get up his shots, though. Didn't do a great job of it against the Pistons, but he did get his shots up. So we'll see the rest of the way. It's only a couple games, but I know some people expected him to dominate. That did not happen. I didn't expect him to dominate. Just run good offense. That's my takeaway. Can he show he can give you 10 to 12 minutes a night if it comes down to that as your backup point guard? Or are we leaning towards more Aaron Holiday than we would like? I don't think it'll just be determined by what happens in the summer league. But as far as what we can see, because we're not going to see a lot or any of training camp, we'll see what he looks like in preseason. Just give me a little hope that year two of Reed Sheppard means more time on the floor than more time us having these conversations about why Reed Sheppard can't get on the floor. I like to do the former. Actually judge his performances as opposed to, hey, how come Reed Sheppard's not playing?
He is playing good defense. Or at least he's getting a lot of steals.
He did have four steals.
Yes. He is getting a lot of steals.
Yes, so. He's getting his hand. Well, which was his calling card, speaking of putting pressure on opposing guards.
That's the funniest thing about Reed Sheppard is that, you look at him and his size. You're like, defensive liability. And like one-on-one, kind of. But he's a turnover machine. He was at Kentucky, at least. And in the summer league, for whatever that's worth.
You mean forcing turnovers?
Yes.
Because he was a turnover machine.
Yeah, both ways.
Okay. Against the Pistons.
It's like, Big 12 offenses, where it's like, this is going to be a high-scoring game for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Not so much for the Cougs to start last year, though.
No, that's more the Big 12 thing. Like, Big 12 doesn't play defense. That's played out. Like, that's back in, 2017, that was the case. Now it's like kind of a normal conference.
Yeah, it's not the Lincoln Riley, because we attribute a lot, because Oklahoma was their best team and could never get stops against
Oklahoma,
teams that matter.
Stoops, Oklahoma State was like that. TCU, when they were really good. Baylor was like that.
Tech and their best teams, y'all.
Just half the conference just could not play defense.
All the offense
Texas
in the
couldn't
world.
Tackle anybody.
Yeah, all the offense in the world couldn't play any defense, and were looked at in a less than serious way. And that continues, but for different reasons today, mostly because Texas and Oklahoma are gone. And you've got the Arizona State of the world now as your favorite to win it, at least according to the recent media poll. And I don't think it helps that no one really thinks of Arizona State as a Big 12 school. It's not. It doesn't help the cachet of the conference.
I think we literally forgot they're in the conference.
Yeah, last week we did. At least I did. When the best team in your conference is a school people think is still a Pac-12 school. Yeah. And some you have to. Oh yeah, I forgot. Yeah, they're in the Big 12. That's how we talk about them. That's unfortunate. But we'll see if Sam Levitt and that Arizona State team can repeat what they did last year in a different way. Now, as they say, Sean, they're the hunted, as opposed to the forgotten about.
Yeah, no one's overlooking them. They're going to have everyone's best shot.
Any more you got in there? Any more cliches you got?
No.
All right. You know what's not cliche? Getting a great car. You know where you get that great car from? Monument Chevrolet. There's nothing played out about getting a great vehicle at a great price, and the place you do that at is Monument Chevrolet. You can check out what they have to offer at monumentchevrolet.com. So, you got your choice, whether you want a new vehicle, a pre-owned one, or maybe you are someone who is starting a business or currently has a business that's been going for some time now and you want to add to your fleet. They have a wide selection of fleet vehicles you can take advantage of. And the best part about Monument Chevrolet is not just the prices, which are great, not just the wide selection. It is the people you're going to get to deal with. Those people understand the car buying process. So even if you don't, maybe you're not one of the people who's been shopping with them for generations, because they've been in business for over 50 years, which means they've been selling cars to generations of families. But maybe you are new and have never been. Well, it's going to be easy and simple for you. They're not going to rush you through anything, but they also understand that the car buying experience is one you don't want it to take forever. You don't want to be on that lot forever. They're going to get you the car that you want as quickly as they can and get you the best price that you can. So check out what they have to offer, and then find the car you want and the price you want at MontyMcChevrolet.com. And then head on out there to Pasadena, south of Bellway 8 and 225. They've got the Salesperson of the Week thing, which all that really means is they are competing to get you into the best car possible. So that means you're going to get great service. So the website is Monument Chevrolet. They're in Pasadena off of Beltway in 225. And also remember this, Chevrolet, together let's drive.
The best in Houston sports talk is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
The Del Olalea Show continues
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's your host, Del Olalea.
So Sean talked about how I shouldn't have, like, you know, maybe suggested Animal Kingdom maybe shouldn't be a topic because we talk about soccer. And we're not going to dive deep into the Club World Cup final because how many people saw it if you didn't have the zone? I mean, at least throughout the tournament, I think it was on TNT yesterday as far as the final. But Chelsea beat PSG. Chelsea now officially world champions of club soccer. They expanded the tournament from like 7 to an actual World Cup style of tournament, and Chelsea went on to win it. Fine, whatever. A Premier League side won a big tournament. Fine. If you didn't catch the end of it, then you missed the best part. So the FIFA president was there and President Trump was there as well. And they flashed to him sitting up where all the dignitaries sit. Normally, you see that quite a bit where if there's a major tournament final in a country, you'll see maybe the prime minister or if they have royalty still in that country or a king or a president, whatever. That person will be sitting up in the stands watching, doing their, I guess, whatever's required of them as a state representative of the state or whatever. But in this case, Trump took it a step further at the beckoning, I guess, of the president of FIFA. Normally, you don't see the president or the prime minister in the trophy ceremony. You might see them handing out the medals, shaking guys' hands. But you normally don't see them in the midst of the biggest moment of that captain's time. Like the captain gets to raise the trophy first. Everyone gets their medal, but the captain is the one who gets to raise the trophy and do the thing where everyone's excited. They celebrate. You get all the press photos. You put it on your social media or whatever. And you could tell the Chelsea players didn't understand what was going on. The star player, Cole Palmer, looked and said, "What's this guy doing?" And then the captain actually looked at Trump and said, "Are you going to leave?" And President Trump said, "No, I'm not leaving." It's really indicative of how these things are handled that Chelsea and their social media had to scramble to make it seem like Trump wasn't there. Like if you go to their social media accounts, all the still photos, at least the big still photo of the team celebrating, Trump is edited out. The president's edited out. In the video, they have like one video of a wide shot of Trump, President Trump there, and he's there. It's a slow-mo, and you can see the president of FIFA trying to wave Trump away to get him out of the shot. He doesn't leave, so he's in the shot. But all the other videos of Chelsea celebrating, for the most part, are tight shots of the captain, and you don't see President Trump, even though he's standing right next to him. They just have a tight shot of the trophy being raised because it never happens. You never have someone who's not team-affiliated in the mix for those things. The president's carving his own path. And I guess he'll be there when the World Cup isn't in the country next year, when the final's here. So I imagine whoever wins it needs to have their social media team ready.
Yeah. If when they Tyler Adams lifts up the trophy. Yeah,
good luck with that. Whoever wins it, unlikely the American, so we'll be raising that trophy. Get ready. Their social media team needs to get ready.
Have a plan.
Yeah, have a plan. Get your editing software ready to go to get, if you don't want the president of the United States in your celebration, have yourself ready and be prepared, because I don't think the Chelsea people expected it because it never happens and they had to make a move. It's a tough spot. You want the video. You want to put that everywhere to show that you won a Club World Cup. you generally don't want a non-Chelsea person involved in the shot. And when it comes to controversy, I don't know if you've heard, but our president is a controversial figure around the world. I don't know if you've heard that about him, Sean.
No. You don't hear much about this guy.
Yeah. Look, man.
Just kind of
does his
job.
He was invited.
Stays low profile.
Sure. That's his
get down.
That's what I've heard about him, too. But as far as Sunday afternoon in New York City, or actually New Jersey at that point, he was not going to be someone who got brushed aside.
No. I mean, he brings up a good point of like, what if I stand here?
What are you going to do about it? Are you going to touch me?
Yeah.
Are you going to politely...
Pull palm or do something.
You're not... Yeah.
Make a move, big guy.
See, I don't know what Luis Enrique would have done. He's a manager for PSG because at the end of that match, he was punching people. So I don't know if he had one. Would he have put hands on the president? Probably not. Seems unlikely. But, yeah, to your point, are you going to shove me aside and tell me to go?
Like, what?
Probably not.
Oh, security is going to come?
Yeah. I don't know if you've heard, but my security force may be a little bit better than yours. So perhaps you won't do anything to get me out of here, get me out of the paint. We'll see how FIFA handles it next summer. Maybe the FIFA president doesn't make the same move he made to try to have his own moment in the sun. He just assumed, I'm going to go down there, hand out some medals, have the president with me to help me hand out these medals, and then we're just going to calmly step to the side once the big moment is ready. Nah. I don't know if – I guess he's never met the president before. He doesn't get out of the way when there's a big moment. I would say just go to Chelsea's social media, particularly their Instagram, if you want to see how they tried to handle this. It's funny to me.
It's funny that it was someone's job to like – and probably late in England, because I assume they didn't fly out everyone.
Yeah, I don't know how they handled it.
Although, I guess they had probably to get someone there to get footage. Yeah, so maybe they did.
And did the editor? I don't know. I'm sure they have a giant team. We only have one person who does everything here. But I'm sure Chelsea's social media team is...
bigger than ours?
Much more expansive than ours. Huh. It's probably more than one person. So maybe they had the on-site person. They sent that stuff back. And they had to take care of it because they want to get that up quickly.
Oh, so got can to see it. Got to let everyone know that you won the Club World Cup.
I mean, if they weren't watching it on TV,
yeah. If they weren't watching it on TV, but are interested in who won the Club World Cup or Chelsea football.
If you follow Chelsea football, but decided you weren't going to watch them win a world championship, we have the social media videos for you. And
is it
for you.
What? Where's in the hierarchy of like? Like, obviously, it's not as big as winning Champions League. Is, like, the next one down?
I don't know. There was a suggestion that the European teams wouldn't take it seriously because they have the Champions League. But once you got down into the knockout stages and you're actually playing major teams from across the world, it seemed like they took it seriously. They celebrated like it was a big deal. The fans enjoyed it like it was a big deal. And it was the first time it was in this format where they actually just decided to make it like the World Cup as opposed to, hey, we're just going to invite 17 from some of the biggest federations across the world and invite them to play. Hell, when an MLS team can make the Club World Cup, now you know they're inviting everyone. They had several. Only Inter Miami got out of the group stage, which was an accomplishment. Of course, they Summer League got pummeled by PSG in the knockout stage, but hey, at least they got through. And PSG, which was on a run, they won Champions League, had a chance to win the Club World Cup, and then they gave up 3 goals in the first half, which is how these things generally go. Like, normally, when a big club gets that type of scoreline put on them early, there's no pushback. There's no fighting back.
Oh, especially July 13th in New Jersey. I think those guys are like, all right.
But even in the Champions
League. All right, I'm 75 minutes away from super yacht time. I think I'm out of here.
Yeah, but even in the Champions League, PSG got up big, and there was no pushback. They wound up being like Inter. That game wound up being like 5-0 or something. It's how those games or matches usually go, even when it involves some of the most talented teams in the world. Once the scoreline gets out of hand.
Germany-Brazil?
A bit ago, but yeah, 7-1. You would think, hey, we got all this talent, we're going to try. No, everyone pretty much like breaks down. And
or
quits.
At some point, you call off the dogs. Dogs not called off.
Actually, the problem is they tried to turn their dogs into Chihuahuas. It's just that that Brazil was like, the Chihuahuas are too much.
What? Yeah, we're literally laying down
all discipline,
on the pitch.
Yeah, all discipline breaks down, and that's how you get a 7-1 semifinal in a World Cup in your home country. One of the bigger
To an MLS team.
Bigger embarrassments in soccer history. In a World Cup semifinal in your home country, the Germans come over there and beat you 7-1. All right, we'll go to break with that. The Club World Cup, I don't know how successful it was. The crowd was packed at MetLife. But just the very end of it, as the trophy was being handed out, shout out to the Chelsea social media team for all they had to do to wipe a very prominent figure off their social media, because that's not how you celebrate winning a title. It should generally always be members of the team and a coach. But hey, the president said not this time. All right, we'll go to break with that. Jeff wants to talk about Josh Hader. Josh Hader, an Astros all-star, along with Isak Paredes and Hunter Brown and Jeremy Pena. And it may just be. Hunter Brown will probably make an appearance. But
I think they said Pena will be there.
He'll be there, but he's not going to play. Yeah. So the only guy who could play is Hader, because also Isak won't be there because of a family matter. So we'll talk about Josh Hader when we come back.
ESPN 97.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to Del Olalea.
All right, let's get to Jeff. He wants to talk some Josh Hader. What's up, Jeff?
How you doing, Del? Good to talk to you again. Hey, I just had a question. I sent you a picture of me and Derek, by the way, your host. Just wanted to see what you thought about, 25 or 26 now, whatever. But he's given up, on average, one home run every five innings, which is not good. I know he hits a lot of fly balls. I just wanted to see what your analytical thought was of every five innings out there, he's going to give up a home run.
I wouldn't say I have any analytical thoughts on it. It's scary a little bit. This team has goals of winning big. We'll see if the lineup, whether it be through health or in addition, that right before the trade deadline, allows for that to happen. But the thought that your closure gives up home runs in what should be tight situations in the playoffs, it's not comforting. You just have to hope that when it matters most, that some of that will stop, or you have big enough leads where you can survive it. So fly ball up in the air, particularly at Minute Maid, to right-handed hitters, not great. That's my analytical approach. My approach, or at least my thought process, is I want a closer who doesn't give up home runs. Why they happen one out of every five, would you say? Did you say innings or batters? One out of every five innings. I'm not going to take that into consideration. I just know that this is a guy, at least this year, who's given up long balls. And you just hope that's a thing that doesn't really come back to haunt them. Clean it up, Josh. That's all we're looking for. Just clean it up. Just
clean it up.
That's my solve. Clean it up, Josh.
He's given up three home runs in the month of July. So three out of his last four outings, he's given up a home run.
Yes, they're coming a little bit faster, more furious than we would like.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, he was none in March. Not that impressive. Two games. April, 1. May, 1. June, 3.
It's picking up a little
July,
bit.
July, 3.
Yeah, it's picked up. June, 3 over the course of the month. We're not looking for that, but fine. But now you got 3 in less than half a month.
Not good.
Not good. Josh Hader is allowed to have a bad half of a month. Every player is. And you just hope now that we're at the All-Star break, although he may be pitching, who knows, that there's a bit of a flip back to what he had been very early in the season and really throughout up until, I guess, June, where that wasn't happening that often.
It is funny. It is, one home run every five innings. also Saturday's game was his first blown save of the year. Like, it's like two stats that seem like they are complete, like, at complete odds of each other. Like,
very, very true.
Yeah. He hadn't given up a blown save until Saturday in a game they ended up winning anyway. And at the same time, as of late, giving up a lot of home runs.
Yeah, he gave up 12 last year. It's 8 right now. His career high home runs given up was way back in 2019 when he gave up 15. So the numbers have certainly increased since he's been in Nashville. He only gave up 3 in his final year with the Padres. So 8 now, 12 now, 8 on pace to, I guess, break the 12 home runs given up last year. It's a ball. It's just a ballpark, particularly if he's going to be pitching to a lot of right-handed hitters, where there's going to be a chance where non-home runs in normal ballparks are going to fly out at Minute Maid, or excuse me, Daikin now, Minute Maid last year. Product of the, he's a product of his environment, Jeff. And by that,
you mean literally the place that's what, 200 something feet away from him every time he pitches.
Yes, he's a. It feels like that, doesn't it? Actually, he's 60
it
feet
is,
away.
It is. Yeah, 200 feet.
Yeah. He's simply a product of Daikin Park's environment, and the home runs are going to be a little bit more frequent than we would like. If I was a real one, I'd look up the home runs he's given up and how many would go out in different ballparks. But I'm not a real one. Not when it comes to baseball stats in the middle of the show. That'd be something I look up during a break, maybe. Maybe I'll have that answer for you when we come back. I appreciate the call, Jeff. Sean pointed out, the man's blown one save all year long. I like that in the middle of July. I appreciate that from my closer. The home runs, if it happens in a playoff game, it shouldn't surprise anyone because of the frequency of what's happening over the course of the last 2 months.
And like anything, like if it happens in the playoffs and they like lose either a pivotal, you know, game 5 or something, or they lose a series because he gives up a home run, like, okay, that's what he'll be remembered as.
Yeah, not the all-star, not the great season. It'll be the home run he gave up, yeah.
Yeah, there's a certain freedom about, like, you know, at the end of the day, with the Astros, now that they look like they're good enough that they're definitely going to be in the playoffs, that's like, at a certain point, like, it only just comes down to 1 month. Like, it, as much as we'd love to, like, you know, break it all down, every game matters for how these guys will be remembered as Astros, it's all about October.
And I've kind of felt that way about the Astros since about 2018-19, where they're always in the playoffs.
Yeah.
They're always a real contender.
Especially as a reliever, too. It's like...
Yeah. Josh Hader giving...
Like you give up, if a reliever gives up one run over the course of a playoff run, you look at him differently every time he goes out there after he gives up the run. You're like, oh my God, we have this guy in. And no matter what, he could have a 2 ERA. The entire season.
Just
oh my God, on Tuesday he gave up a run. Now come in right now. Oh my God.
Yeah. In a game, in a high leverage situation, you're up 3-2 and there's a man on second. He gives up the tying run. You're going to think, Abreu's up again. I hope he comes through this time because he didn't the last time. Never mind how great he had been up until that point and maybe what he was after. There's always in the back of your head, when is he going to, quote-unquote, blow up again? Yeah. So
I mean, Ryan Stressly got the nickname Stressly.
When he was one of the best bullpens in postseason history. Now, it was warranted to give him that nickname.
Yes.
But in his biggest moments.
Yes. In 2022.
He came through.
I don't think he gave up a run. Entire bullpen gave up like 2 runs that entire
He was a
postseason.
Big part of why you won that World Series, but the nickname... It's actually the opposite in that case. He was great in the postseason, but there was enough of a background and then also what happened afterwards where he never lost that nickname. But to your point, the relievers, they're much like kickers. You got one job. Just do it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good comparison, especially when it comes to like playoffs. It's like, hey, you have one inning. Get 3 outs, please.
Get 3 outs, please. Or you got to get 1 out to shut down an inning. Just do it. That's your job. And we know no one's perfect, so sometimes they're going to fail. And if Hader's going to give up a home run and they wind up winning the game anyway, so one game they won in the series, I think I'm fine.
Yeah. they needed him to give up that home run.
Just don't do it in the playoffs, or your name is Mud. That's all.
Your name's Brad Lidge. That's what your name is.
Yeah, Brad Lidge, pretty good pitcher. But we do remember. And by the way, they
won that series.
They won that series.
They might have won that game. Like,
I don't remember they won the game, but they won the series. But he's always remembered that. And in some ways, blame for why they didn't win the World Series, you know, excluding the fact they never scored any runs, is because it screwed up their rotation the rest of the way. If they could have got out of that one, they could have had a different rotation.
Then they did lose that game. Yeah.
Yeah. They did lose it. They had to go to a game 7. They wound up winning that one relatively easily, but they didn't have Roy for game 1 against the White Sox. Never mind the fact that no runs were scored by
them.
Yeah,
they lost like every game 1-0 or 2-1.
Whatever it was. Their lineup, which wasn't prolific, continued their lack of hitting, and they wound up losing the World Series. But what we remember is Brad Lidge and the home run. All right, we'll go to break. Thank you for the call, Jeff. I feel like Josh Hader will be fine until he's not, and then we'll rip him to shreds because that's how we all operate. We got one more segment to go here. If you want to get in, you can. You can be like Jeff, 713-780-3776.
Houston's only FM sports stations, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
One more segment here. You can get in, 713-780-3776. Paul Gallant is up next. You know, he's followed by the Killer Bees. And those two shows are going to be out at McCormick and Schmick. It'll be the town and country location on Thursday from noon to 6. It's part of our summer circuit tour. And it's what we do all summer. And you guys got a chance to visit different restaurants around the greater Houston area. And each week you can register to win our grand prize of this summer, a pair of brand new e-bikes from Power On Electric Bicycle Company. It's a $4,000 value. And for registration, you can stop by the promo table at the broadcast. They'll be at McCormick and Schmick, town and country location, this Thursday. Also, on Friday, the entire station is going to be at East River 9. So if you want to join us out there, you can as well. That won't be part of the summer circuit tour, but it is us out and about at East River 9. You can come out there and join us. John and Lance are going to be out at Texas Card House. I say John and Lance because I won't be there. We're short on bodies, so I will be back here doing the show. John will be the engineer, so fun and hilarity will ensue. Maybe John will be engineering that show.
Hopefully, a show will ensue.
It's up for debate. I mean, it's not that far away. So the question is, considering if there's an issue, could I
drive over
there, just leave us in on national stuff for like probably a total of 25 minutes or so, and then get back?
You could drive over there at 6:30, set it up, and drive for
Don't give him any ideas, Sean.
Okay, sorry.
Don't put that out there.
I'll dump that.
Yeah, too late now. Hey, whoever's out there, we have an intern today?
No.
Well, edit that out of the podcast. John and or
one
Lance
long
listen back.
Beep.
Yeah, whatever. But either way, we're going to be out and about all week long. Well, Thursday and Friday, let's be clear. Won't be all week. But Thursday and Friday, we're going to be out and about all the shows. So come out there in the different spots and join us. I don't know. If you like poker, Texas Card House will welcome you. And then, of course, East River 9 and McCormick and Schmick as well. All right. So a lot of the conversation this summer, at least leading up to the summers, where would Giannis go? Is he someone the Rockets would want? Well, they made their big move. They got Kevin Durant. Giannis probably would have taken considerably more assets going the Bucks' way than what the Rockets have to give up to secure Kevin Durant. Well, apparently that would have been a futile. Those conversations were all futile because, according to the Bucks, they're just laughing at everyone considering that Giannis is available. Here's the Bucks president. I'm going to go with Peter Fagan. Go with that pronunciation. Peter Fagan. He was with the the Summer League crew, one of the Summer League crews, discussing Giannis and the future of the Bucks, and apparently we all have been wasting our time.
What is your take on where the Bucks are with Giannis right now moving forward?
You know, we kind of laugh internally. It's where we've been for 10 years. Giannis loves Milwaukee. Milwaukee loves Giannis. We're in a good place. We feel great about it. It's business as usual. I think we get kind of a fun little joy in everybody else thinking they know what's going on and, right. and what the clickbait is. But, you know, for us, we're in a good spot. Giannis is in a good place. He's enjoying the summer. And we're looking forward to next season.
So, Sean, do we buy this? Everything that Giannis has said, and he hadn't said much, is he wants to be in Milwaukee. He has said, or at least when asked where he's going to be, probably Milwaukee. It's interesting to know, or at least to be told, that the Bucks are just laughing at everyone having these talks. And when you can secure Cole Anthony to be someone who can run your offense in the backcourt, maybe you have every right to laugh. That's a small move that happened over the weekend. Cole Anthony was traded for Desmond Bane and picks to the Grizzlies. They have bought him out, released him. So it looks like the Bucks are going to have Cole Anthony. He's a guy who started in his career, certainly a bench player as well. So they have tried to strengthen their roster in, let's say, less than traditional ways. They stretched and waived Dame to get the room to sign Miles Turner, and then they've picked up Cole Anthony. So they're going to be a little different. Does that mean they're going to be good? It's the East, so you have Giannis, you've got a shot to at least be competitive, but not concerned. So maybe we all have wasted our time talking about Giannis, if he's going to be on the move or not. I actually hope so. I hope he stays.
I would be a little bit concerned that he said probably Milwaukee. Like, I would just have like one, like, wait, why probably?
Yes, if you're a fan of the Bucks, that probably just caught you.
I wouldn't laugh
in a way.
You know, he's laughing at it. I would be laughing. And then when Giannis on a stream goes, probably Milwaukee. Probably.
Yeah, the probably is most,
I would like a definitely.
Yes, you would have wanted, I'm going to be in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Cut and dry. But
probably, it's like, why do you want that wiggle room?
And mostly I want him in Milwaukee because it means he's not a Spur.
Yeah. You're playing defense?
Yes. I don't want him in San Antonio. That's all. That's mostly why I hope he stays in Milwaukee. If Giannis ain't happy in Milwaukee, sure. But let's stay out of San Antonio. So I hope he's happy in Milwaukee. Because the thought of him, Wimby, and whoever else is remaining, and considering it's the Spurs, they probably won't have to give up much because they never give up much for anything. They luck into Wimby. They didn't have to give up much for De'Aaron Fox. So I'm expecting just Keldon Johnson.
And filler.
And that'll get Giannis into San Antonio.
Well, we can't give up Vassell. Okay, that's fine.
Okay, you know what? We agree. You can't give him up.
Yeah. Sohan.
Yeah, I need the Bucks to not act like the Kings. That's all. All right, we're done for the day. Paul Gallant's up next. So since we're done, what does that mean, Sean?
We did it!
We did. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5.